Zant, executive reporter for MLB.com. Welcome to the Executive Access Podcast. When we started this series back in 2017, we welcomed nearly every general manager throughout the game. The interviews began as a featured part of the MLB Newsmakers podcast feed. There was so much interest in the interviews, we ended up launching the Executive Access Podcast on its own feed in the spring of 2018. Since you might have missed those podcasts the first time around, we dug into the archives to re-air some of our greatest hits. This week, we start our throwback series with Nationals President of Baseball Operations and General Manager Mike Rizzo. Following a three-year minor league career, Rizzo entered the scouting world, following in his father's footsteps. He became the Diamondbacks scouting director in 2000, remaining with Arizona through 2006, collecting a World Series ring in 2001. In 2006, Rizzo joined the Nationals as assistant GM, then became the interim GM at the beginning of 2009, a post that became official that August. We discussed his rise through the front office ranks, the risks of signing players to long-term deals, and much, much more. As we wait for baseball to return, I hope you enjoy this 2017 conversation with Nationals President of Baseball Operations and General Manager, Mike Rizzo.
You were the 554th pick in the 1982 draft, playing three seasons in the Angels minor league system before being released. What made you decide so quickly that your future was as a player?
Well, you know, they often make that decision for you, and that's what happened in my case. You know, my dad, who was, you know, he's been in baseball for a long time. You know, we had kind of a decision when I got released. I had an opportunity to play for another couple of minor league teams, and you know, we kind of sat down and said, my dad said that, you know, you're really your tool wise not really capable of being a big league player. You should, you know, instead of being a you know, a lifetime minor leaguer, then get out of professional baseball, and you have nothing to show for it, and you got to go get a job. You're intelligent college grad. You could do some other things in the game that you love, and so from that point, I decided to go in a different direction, and was lucky enough. I got a coaching job at University of Illinois, finished my degree there, and then. Began my scouting career after that.
For someone who had hoped to be a professional baseball player, is that a hard thing to hear from your dad, or do you appreciate the fact that he was so straight with you about it?
It was, you know, he's nothing but straight with me. Believe me, it was hard to hear. Yeah, it was difficult to hear. You know, oftentimes, you know, players are the worst self evaluators, you know, of their own talents, and I thought that. You know, and we discussed it and we argued about it, and you know, at the end of the day, you know, it was always in my best interest, and that's the way I took it, and you know, to this day I appreciate it because it was the right decision to make at the time.
So after your coaching career in Illinois, how did you land your first pro job?
Well, so you know, again, I was very fortunate. So I played my years for the California Angels in the minor league system. The scouting director at the time was Larry Himes. Larry coincidentally got the job as the general manager of the Chicago White Sox the year after I was released and coached for a year and a half at University of Illinois. And when he got that job, he called me and thought from our playing days together, he liked the way, you know, my baseball acumen and my attitude and energy and that type of thing, and offered me a job as an area scout.
How much did you learn from your father about the scouting business?
A lot. You know, I learned a lot from him about baseball in general, and a lot about the business of scouting. You know, he was a long time minor league player and a long time baseball guy, and you know, he's probably forgotten more about baseball than I'll ever know. And he's really a bastion of knowledge of the intricacies of scouting and how to evaluate players. So I've learned a lot from him, and a lot from other guys in those days that were like kind of the in the forefront of the scouting industry. The Nick Kamzik, the guy who signed myself, and other great players, and including Joe Maddon and that type of thing. So you know, all those guys taught me a lot.
This job's obviously a lot more than just scouting, but how does that scouting background help you in the GM chair?
I think it you know, I'm confident when I see what I see. You know, I know when I look at a player, you know, I have a confidence about that. I know that player, and I think that the background of having a Rolodex of players in my mind to compare current players to is invaluable. I was an area scout for 12 years. I was a cross checker. I was a scouting director. I ran a farm system, and I was assistant GM. So I've done advanced scouting, pro scouting. So I've done most jobs on the baseball end of it, and I think that not only gives me a good foothold on seeing players and evaluating players, but I also know how to manage the people in these jobs, because I've felt their pain. I've gone through what they're doing, the trials and tribulations of being a scouting director, a farm director, and that type of thing. So I think that it gives me credibility in their minds, knowing that I've done what they do and appreciate what they do. And I think that it gives me an added perspective of how things should work.
You're Arizona scouting director from 2000 to 2006. You won that ring in 2001. What was that like to watch that World Series, given the highs and lows of those seven games?
It was an incredible run, an incredible World Series. It really did teach me that it's not over till it's over. We came out of Arizona 2-0. We were flying high. I remember the flight to New York. We were on top of the world, and then you've got those three crushing defeats at Yankee Stadium in a row, and two of them we had leads late in the game and gave it up, and the flight back was a polar opposite of the flight there. So it also taught me that that talent wins, because we did come back and ran Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson out at him in games 6 and 7, and it shows how roster construction is what it's all about in the GM chair. And Joe Garagiola did a masterful job of that. And also taking chances and stepping outside the box, which he did on many occasions. Signing a 6'10" left-handed pitcher coming off back surgery and giving him a big four-year deal. And Joe was rewarded by 4 Cy Youngs in a row from him. Pretty good sign. That one was okay.
You started the 2009 season as the interim GM here after Jim Bowden's resignation. The Nationals were 43-78 when you were made the full-time GM that August. Were you surprised at all by the timing?
No, I that spring training, 2009 spring training, I was kind of doing a lot of the duties that a general manager would do. Stan Caston and I were in lockstep with that. I thought I'd prepared myself for this job. My whole scouting career, I was always trying to thinking as a GM would think. So, when I was named interim GM, I knew I had a great opportunity to put my fingerprints on the roster and try and change things for the better bring some respectability and a winning culture to the franchise.
You guys lost 93 games in 2010, after which you received a 5-year extension and a promotion to Executive VP of Baseball Operations. In a game where results matter as much as they do, how encouraging was it to know that the organization had that much trust and faith in you?
But they've always supported me greatly. I think that what they saw was our franchise going in the right direction. We had developed a plan. We had developed a strategy and a timeline to get to our goals, and they saw that the implementation and the process that we used was solid and it was working. So I think that in that situation, you have a great executive in Stan Caston recognizing and ownership recognizing that we had a good thing going, and this was just the start of it.
Your decision to shut down Steven Strasburg at the end of 2012 obviously received plenty of attention. Did you ever second guess yourself after that?
I never, process? Mark, I never did. I was so comfortable with it. Knowing Strass, the way I did, knowing the situation the way I knew it, knowing the health and the risks and everything that he went through, I felt it was the right thing to do. I was committed to it. I was passionate about it, and I had the support of ownership and the manager at the time. And believe me, we had a manager at the time in Davey that if he didn't agree with it, it would have been well known that he didn't agree with it. I was surprised by all the attention that I got, but I also was prepared that there was going to be some negativity attached to it. But I sleep like a baby with that decision.
We've seen other teams go through the same exact thing with young pitchers around the league. Do you feel for those GMs when they're going through the same kind of situation?
I do. I mean, those are all tough decisions to make. And I think you have to stand by your philosophy and stand by your morals and do what's best. And I thought doing what was best for the player was best for the organization, and I think that Strauss has been a great pitcher for us since then. He's a great part of the organization now. He's part of the community, and I think that kind of opened the door for the way that a lot of teams protect their pitchers and think about these things. Before, it wasn't really examined as closely until we shut Strauss down.
Have your views or philosophies towards the game changed very much since the beginning of your career to now?
No, it's the greatest sport on earth, and we have a duty to keep it the way it is and keep it as the greatest America's game. And I think that you see the onslaught of these young stud players that are playing nowadays. I think we're in a renaissance of youthful, unbelievably talented players in the game right now. I think we're in a terrific spot for the game of baseball in America.
Even though you've been a baseball lifer, are there any executives from any other industries or areas that have influenced you throughout your career?
Yeah, there's Jerry Colangelo was a big part of my process. You know, he's notably more of a basketball guy than is a baseball guy. Although he played baseball at the University of Illinois, that's a little tidbit for you. His managing style and the way he handled things was instrumental. Joe Garagiola was a big part of my career. Stan Kasten is a guy I learned a lot from. So, there's so many people that have kind of built the way I manage. It's just too many to mention, but those are a few of the key ones. Of course, my dad is probably the utmost person that has molded my personality and the way I treat people. So. It's a simple formula here. We're a baseball shop. We have a very talented analytical staff that we've put in place here, but we're first and foremost a baseball shop, and we handle our issues and our problems face to face and man to man. And I think that has been well received by the players. I think they respect the way we do business here. They may not always agree with what we do, but they respect the process.
That's a good lead into the next question. You said you trust scouting more than analytics, but there are some that believe sabermetrics are more important than traditional scouting. Do you think scouting has become less important league-wide, or do you just think the importance of analytics has caught up to the importance of scouting?
Well, I think it's all a package. You have to have analytics. You have to have eyeballs on the player. I learned things from the analytics that you can't see on the field, but I also see things on the field that you can't analyze. So it goes hand in hand, and you have to be in lockstep, or you're going to be left behind because we have a cutting edge, experienced scouting staff here, but we've got Ivy Leaguers, crunching the numbers and giving us their ideas on how to better this team. And the teams that mesh those two things together and comfortably, I think are teams that are going to be most successful.
Although teams have been doing this for a long time, MLB StatCast has made some of these metrics more publicly available to fans. Do you think that's good for the game, for fans to have access to some of these things?
Oh, I think it's great for the fans. It's knowledge is power, and makes everybody a pseudo general manager, and I think that there's opinions are great. I think conversations and discussing the game only improves the game, and if these publicly accessible analytics helps do that, then I'm all for it.
Other teams have reportedly had interest in you to run their clubs in recent years. Is it flattering when you hear such things?
Well, it's just flattering. It's embarrassing a little bit sometimes, but it's good to be recognized. But the success we've had here in Washington, it's not a Mike Rizzo thing. It's a Washington Nationals thing. I'm proud of the people I brought in here. Yeah, I take credit for that. But we've got great people here, and the guys that you don't see here are as important as the guys you do see here. It's, I have an affinity for scouts. They're on the road, 200, 300 days a year, missing birthdays and anniversaries and their kids, first Little League baseball games. And they're the unsung heroes. They find the players. They sign the players. Then you'd pass them off to the Doug Harrises and those guys who develop the players, and the guys are pounding the fungos and make them better. And once we get them to the big leagues, we take credit for them. But it's all that periphery below that separates the average to the good to the great.
The Nationals have come a long way as a franchise since you became the GM. What do you think was the turning point where the team sort of turned that corner and started down the road where it's gone?
Well, I always say that in 2009, the first philosophical change that we navigated here was I was allowed the resources to go out and get the best and brightest scouts, coaches, player development people, and I think that was the start of our success. Because again, go back to the last statement I made. It's all about finding the players, developing the players to get to the big league club. So when I got the opportunity to go out and really hire a the best and the brightest that we felt in the game was I think the number one turning point in our turnaround to success.
Had some players with some big contracts over the years. A lot of the nine-figure contracts end up, I don't want to say they'd be busts, but rarely do they. You look at the entirety of a contract and say it was great all the way.
Sure.
Sometimes you say you signed a guy and the last couple of years might be not as good. How tough is it to make that decision, to make such a financial commitment to a player? That's got to be a big leap of faith to some extent, no?
Well, you really have to know the player that you're committing long term to. You have to know their personalities, their work ethic, how they're going to react to this. This huge amount of money in this long-term deal. So I think that you have to be very, very careful with the personalities that you do it with, I think that you ultimately you have to these long-term signings have to come in. They have to fit into your 1, 3, 5 year plans and your long-term global look at your franchise, and it's never a win now scenario with that because the commitment is too long. So they have to fit into you with your win now mode, but you're also your win for a long period of time mode.
With what you said about you have to know the player, is it easier to make that kind of commitment to a guy that you've had here already versus trying to get to know a player from another team in that short free agent period of time to make such a commitment?
I think it is. The teams that know their players the best often make the best extension signings and trades. And so when you trade away a player, you know the player you're trading away, hopefully better than the team that's acquiring them. And so I think that it is easier because you've lived with that player for an extended period of time before you make that commitment. When you're out there signing a free agent, you better do your due diligence and your homework on how that player is going to fit into not only your lineup, but your clubhouse, your community. And I think all those are vital to having a successful long-term signing.
You were able to sign Strasburg to a long-term deal. We don't look at this as any kind of a window, or how much time do you spend thinking about the next 2 or 3 years or what could be on the way?
We're always looking forward. We're always looking, we're in win now mode, but also be competitive for the long term. And we like where we're at as far as an organization. We have a lot of key components that are locked up long term. We've got ourselves a fertile farm system that we know is going to be a feeder system for the big league club. And we look at we don't look at windows. We look at the landscape as we're going to be a championship caliber organization for the long haul.
What stands out to you most about Trey Turner as a player?
Well, to me, there's a lot of players that have come along that can run like him. Most of those players are really fast runners that are learning to play baseball. Trey Turner's baseball player one, knows the game, great baseball IQ, that happens to be able to fly. And I think that's what is the most gratifying part of getting him in the trade is we got ourselves a baseball player one, and beyond that is a baseball player with this special tool of speed, but also had the tool of bat and arm and glove and intangibles, and he really knows his game and there's, there's a bright future for the kid.
You've been fined a couple times by MLB during your career, both essentially for standing up for your players. How critical is it for players to know that the GM's in their corner?
Well, I'm around a lot. I'm with the players a lot. I'm on most road trips and all the home games, and I have a relationship with them. It's a professional relationship. I think the players know that I'm accessible. I'm going to be ultra honest with them and look them in the eye and make decisions. I also think that my job is to protect the players, and when I think that something needs to be said and I need to protect them, I've done so. And I think that the response I get from them after these things has been positive. Obviously those are situations I don't want to be in, but I do think that, my franchise comes first, and I have to, I'm the caretaker of the franchise, and I think that it's my job to protect my players.
What's been your best moment as GM here?
Yeah, I think getting to Champaign poured on me in 2012 when we made the playoffs for the first time was probably the highlight of it. But I love the day-to-day grind. That's the best part of this job, where you come in, you come into the office, and they're long days, and they're grueling days, and it's a grinding season, but it's baseball every day. My dad woke up at 3:30 in the morning every morning to go work as a truck driver for the city of Chicago. So I got it pretty good.
Sounds like you take a player's mentality into this job.
I really do. I think that because I played in the minor leagues and wasn't successful, I really appreciate that these are the 750 greatest baseball players in the world. And I know how difficult it is to do what they do, and I do not take it lightly.
Washington's always been considered a football town first. You've had success in recent years while the Redskins have been up and down. Do you think D.C. can ever become a baseball town first?
I think it's a baseball town now. It may share the stage with the other sports, but it's a baseball town. Game 5 last year against the Dodgers, it was the loudest I've ever been a party to, and I was at Game 7 Yankee Diamondbacks, and this place was rocking and rolling. And I see the neighborhood around the ballpark is really thriving. I see the city wrapping their arms around us and us really during baseball season really becoming a baseball town. And I'll tell you what, there's some rabid fans out there that know the game and that are really into the Nationals.
The old cliche is that a season is not a success unless you're the last team standing. Do you subscribe to that theory?
Yes, I do. I do. You could have. We've had several good seasons, but we just haven't had the ultimate season yet. And I also adhere to the philosophy that there's only one team happy at the end of the season, so 29 are unhappy. We strive to be that team. Our goal is to have a parade down Pennsylvania Avenue.
We hope you enjoyed our first throwback episode of Executive Access. In the coming weeks, we'll hear from Brian Cashman of the Yankees, Jed Hoyer of the Cubs, Mark Shapiro of the Blue Jays, and many more top executives around the league. You can search for Executive Access on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Art19, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. So be sure to subscribe and enjoy these conversations all season long. If you like what you hear, leave us a review while you're at it. We always appreciate those. And be sure to spread the word and tell all the baseball fans in your life about Executive Access. Until next time, I'm Mark Feinstein. Stay safe, everybody.